Tonight's speaker is Jack B. from Irvine. Round of applause.
Good evening. My name is Jack. I'm an alcoholic. Before I start, I want to get some groundwork done here. I do not have a speech impediment. I was born and raised back in Providence, Rhode Island. So you guys have to work at that a little bit. But anyways, you guys get tired of listening before I get tired of talking, I'll understand. Okay. I am powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable by me. I've worked with a lot of guys, and I remember what it was for me when I took that first step. And I didn't understand what they meant when they say you take a step. What do you do with it? You know, you read it, my life is unmanageable, and I'm powerless over alcohol, I guess I am. But what I found out is that I had to really understand what it was. So I don't work the steps anymore. I study them. Because what it is to me, the 12 steps are a spiritual toolkit that's laid at my feet. And they help me get through life. You know, if you got a problem with drinking, just don't drink. You get problems living, come in and learn how to live. And Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me tremendously in my growth. I'm far from perfect. I don't claim to be perfect. And I do the best I can one day at a time. Now, how did I find a power that was greater than myself? Well, through a bunch of little things that happened along the way. Like, my wife left me, and the next day I got an invoice from a shrink. And I said, well, right away my magic mind told me that that piece of guts caused my problems. And so I called him immediately. And I was going to clean his clock. And he says, oh, he said, I just had a cancellation. Do you want to come over and talk right now? I said, you bet your ass. I jumped in the car and I went over there. Well, I'd forgotten that my wife had been talking to him for God knows how long. And so I walk in and he's sitting behind this huge desk. I mean, it must have been 5 or 6 feet deep. Big desk. And he looked at me and he said, Jack, I want to ask you a question. I said, what's that? He says, is there any alcoholism in your family? Well, you could have put a lie detector on me and that needle would not have budged a fraction of an inch. I looked him right in the eye. I said, absolutely not. How could you say something like that to me? Now, I got a little pissed then. And he says, well, he says, tell me about your family. I said, you know what? My dad drank a fifth of Johnny Walker every night. And if you needed to talk to him, you got to talk to him before 6 o'clock. Because after 6 o'clock, he was still there, but he was gone. And he'd sit and he'd tell us. There are 8 kids in my family, and I was the second oldest. And he'd grab myself and my older brother and sit us down and really lay it on about what we were, where we came from, where our family came from, etc., etc., etc. And what he was really telling me is the way he lived his life. He had to pretend. He came from a good place, but he wasn't good. He hurt like a son of a gun. So what I did, I listened to him. And back then, in the olden days, to heat our houses, we used to burn coal. and you'd have a furnace, and you'd have to shake the grates and take all the ashes out one day a week, put them on the curb in big trash cans, and they'd come by and pick it up, and you put it back in the basement when you got home from school. Well, when I got pissed and sideways with my old man, I used to take his bottles and set them in the trash can like a rack of lamb, the little Johnny Walker bottles, sort of squares. I'd put them in there. Everyone would see his bottles when they drove down the street to go to work. Now, this is how funny alcoholics are. We carry these bottles in that special bag. You know, everyone knows what's in it, but we carry that in just like nothing at all. But when we got to get rid of our empties, oh shit, we don't want anyone to see the empties. So, you know, I knew how to get his attention. And we went from there to not having such a strong relationship. And by the time I was 17, I took a hostage. I married a girl. 7 months later, she had a baby boy. You know, and here I am, 17, but I had a heck of an opportunity. I got in the union back in Boston in the hoisting engineers, and I was making fantastic money, believe me. All through my career, I've often wondered, what would it have been like if I stayed there? I think it would have been nice. But my attitude and my way I handled things were, if you bothered me, I'd punch you in the mouth. I mean, I'm sorry, but I mean, that's the way I handled shit. And a lot of people didn't like that. I don't know why, but they didn't. So, I got a job, get this, where they paid me to take people out to lunch and dinner. Now, when you take a customer out to dinner, that's a code for, let's get ripped tonight. You know, dinner may be, you know, eggs over easy in a restaurant at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's... matter of fact, my stomach just does a little twist there thinking about it. But I traveled all over the country. And I think I had fun. I had times when... one time I was in San Francisco. And I was supposed to go to San Diego, but I missed the plane. So what's an alcoholic in training do? You wait for the next flight, sitting in the bar. Well, about 4 hours, 5 hours later, I wake up and I'm sitting on a bus and I'm bouncing up and down on this dirt road. Like, I said, geez, where the hell am I now? And I look out and there's this big, big Quonset hut. And it has an A on the front of it. And I said, oh shit, they're up here too, huh? The guy next to me says, what? I says, is that AA? He says, yeah, that's Alaska Airlines. I said, where am I? He said, Anchorage. And I look, I had summer clothes on. I was going to San Diego, you know. And no overcoat. I mean, I had to do a lot of quick stepping to get out of that. I did, but it was, you know, a lot of work. And I had other little occasions like that that would crop up. You know, I found out that if you lose your car in a parking garage, you don't stop looking for it. You go back to the hotel, leave a wake-up call for 3 o'clock in the morning, come downstairs at 3:15, you'd have them order a cab, and you'd go over to the parking garage and you'd have them drive around. And anytime you saw a car, it was a GM or Chrysler Corporation or whatever, I could tell by the key. I'd have him stop by a new one. And I'd go and try the key. Until we found the car. I mean, found it, paid the ticket, the taxi driver, drove back to the hotel, just like nothing at all happened. Now, I've had a lot of experiences like that, and it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun. I even think nowadays that when I first came in, I never thought that I had a blackout. I just had times when I couldn't remember. You know, and I know I must have had a good time because I can remember the beginning and I can remember the end, but in between, it got a little fuzzy. And but I still kept trying, I'll tell you that. I didn't give up. And I moved out to California, late 60s, and I started a business. And I grew it until 1983, 82. And I sold it. I sold it to a Fortune 500 company. And they kept me on for about a year. I had a 3-year contract, and I didn't want any more than that. And they took a beautiful money-making company and I annihilated it. Just ripped it up into pieces. And they were telling me I didn't know how to run a business. And I said, I ran it so enough so that you guys jumped on it. And I said, now I don't know how to do it. Well, you don't know how we do it. And I said, all I know, you're losing millions of dollars. I said, what kind of education or what kind of courses did you take in college to learn how to lose that much money? All you do is document it well. You know, and then it got down to, I suggested that they have intercourse with themselves. And they didn't like that. So they came out 2 weeks later and they fired me. But they forgot that I had that contract. So they had to pay me full contract, benefits, everything for an additional 2 years. And, you know, and what I did is I went sailing 3 or 4 times a week, played golf 3 or 4 times a week. And after 1 year, I decided that being retired really sucked because I had to work just as hard to get people lined up to play golf, people to go sailing with me. I mean, it was really a hump and a half. And I said, you know, work was easier than this. So I decided I was going to go back to work. Well, I thought I had so much to give. And I really do. But there aren't a lot of people out there that understand it until they get caught. When they get caught, then they really need me. But anyways, I started a consulting business. And I've been doing that for 25, 30 years now. And I've done work all around the world. People say, when was the last time you advertised? I said, probably 30 years ago. And I said, you know, my phone keeps ringing. 4 or 5 months ago, I made a decision. I am going to retire. I'm going to stop. Well, I tell people I'm like a whore. You know, they call, I go. You know, I probably have to do a 4 step on that. But I just realized, I did realize that I was not in control. And the only way that I would survive this would be to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Let Him be in charge. It tells me in the big book. Turn it over to Him. Well, how do you turn it over to God? When my head gets kicked off and says, what the hell are you doing, Jack? You should be doing this. They're screwing you. You know, what I've got to do is I've got to say, God, help me. See, when I came in, I had all kinds of experience with religion. I didn't have a problem with the God issue. I didn't know who it was. But they taught me in AA to find that higher power, a God that I could do business with. And I'll tell you, that's what I did. My God now is I can do business with him. I can talk to him. I don't have to go to any special place in the city to contact him. I can contact him wherever I am. And he answers me. Now, I don't say he picks up the phone and says, Jack, I want you to do this. No. But what he does do is he puts the next indicated thing in front of me. And I get an opportunity to either do it or not. And the times that I don't want to do it, I get to be responsible for it. And I don't like to be responsible for it. If I turn it over to him and let him take care of me, then it works. And this is why I talk about these 12 steps, is that when I learn what each step really means, then and only then can I apply it to my everyday life. One of my pet peeves is that, you know, when we read the chapter 5, the ABCs, and everybody chimes in, this is the only thing I agree with Clancy about, the parrots. God couldn't would if he was taught. Raise his hand. Well, I had a hell of a time this week. My wife said, da 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 da. I said, where's God could and what if he was sought? Where'd that go? Everyone says it. They sort of sing it. But are you really saying it? Are you hearing what you say? And that's very, very important. At least it has been for me. I have to listen to what I say. And it's helped me out tremendously, believe me. Another great thing that I've learned in this program is it's okay if someone has a different opinion from mine. When I have a different opinion, because my self-worth was down there, I knew I was wrong. So what I'd have to do, I'd have to defend my position. I'd have to show that son of a bitch that this is the way it is, and you're stupid if you don't agree with me. And go on and on and on and on. And, you know, we start here and we end over there, maybe. And but now I can say, I can look at people, and I can say, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I have a diametric opposite feeling. It's not the same that you have, and you know what? It's okay if you have a different opinion. Well, I tried that out a few times, and then with my ex-wife, a lovely person I was married to for 45 years, and she told me she made a mistake back in 1955, so, you know, that was a tough pill to swallow, but I started doing that with her, and it was like having a treat in my hand and with a little puppy. She says, well, oh, I really don't know whether I'm sure about that, but, you know, I said, okay. You have every right in the world to have your own opinion. Man, that saved me so much trouble. So much trouble. And then I got another friend at a meeting says, Jack, never pass up the opportunity to keep your mouth shut. They tell me that women, when they tell you their problems, they do not want you to come up with a plan for how to solve those problems. All they want is for you to listen. They'll handle it 100 times better than you would anyways. So just keep your mouth shut and say, yeah, gee, that must have really hurt. And that's the truth. There's no in between. And you don't have to tell her that she's a bad person. That makes a big, big difference. Well, Jack it's learned an awful lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. My fourth step was really very, very interesting to me. And because I didn't think I caused anyone any harm. The only one I hurt was myself. And that was a crock. Because I hurt everyone around me. Everyone. And when I make amends, I learned how to make amends. When I make an amend, I say, I am sorry that I did that and that I embarrassed you. It must have felt horrible. And I'm truly sorry, and I don't ever want to do that again. That's an amend. This business is just walking by and say, gee, I'm sorry. That doesn't get it, because that'll come back at you. And that's worked well for me. I have some things I'm going to leave here for you guys. It's a thing I made up, I printed up, and it's a card that has the third step prayer on it. And I made it a point not to memorize these prayers, because my magic mind will change them to suit my way. So what I did, I printed them up. And I, third step prayer, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may be a witness to those I would help of thy power, thy way, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Now, if you can say that once or twice a day, pretty soon you're going to start to hear it. And when you get someplace where someone's a real jerk, and you think that, you know, God should strike him dead right now, you know, he made a mistake with that one, you know, I say that, and I tell him, thy will be done, not mine. Seventh step prayer. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Now, when I did that seventh step prayer, I was in a park with my sponsor, and he had the big book. He opened the big book up, he pointed to the seventh step prayer. He says, okay, I want you to read this. And then he put his arm around me. Now, wait a minute. Here's a guy, and he put his arm around me, and he pulled me down to my knees. I said, holy shit. People are looking, and I'm saying, oh, my God. He says, read it. And I read it. I figured out that I'm now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I'm saying, okay, God, you made me. You know who I am. I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. What I'm doing is trying to tell you that now I know. And I need your help to change. Well, that turned my life around. That really did. That seventh step where I could have a relationship with God. The way I was raised, I'd have to be Lily White to have a relationship with God. I had to be perfect. What a crock that was. He loves me the way I am. And he'll use me when he chooses to. Okay. Now I got another little prayer here. It's one that we hear a lot of people say, how do you release someone? Now, my magic mind, my way of releasing someone is pushing them off a cliff. You know, I mean, just stay on. But this is what I have learned. God, I release so-and-so to their highest good with love and acceptance of your will for their lives.
Wow.
Who just said that? Did I say that? You know? It really does work. You know, AA is a simple program for complicated people. And so many of us try and make it complicated so that we know how it works. I don't know how it works, I just know it does. And then, what do? You get up to the 11th step. And how do you live your life? Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there was despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, and where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Now get this, Lord, grant. I lost my place. Lord, grant that I may. Oh, come on. Okay. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted. To understand than to be understood. Now, when I'm communicating with someone else, I have to keep my mouth shut. I have to listen to what they're saying. And after they get done, then I get a chance to say what I want to say. But while they're sharing and telling me all this stuff, if I don't shut up and listen, if I'm thinking about how I'm going to respond, shit, I'm off the mark. But anyways, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. Now that's a tough one. You know, my ex-wife, it really was tough. I said we had a very amenable divorce. We split everything 50-50. She got the assets and I got the liabilities. Don't own your own business and get a divorce in California, because they're going to stick it to you like you could never believe. But anyways, for it is by so forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. God, I ask for, and this is the resentment prayer. This is the special, special prayer when you want to kill someone. And it can happen, you know, someone bumps into you in the supermarket with a shopping cart. I mean, you know, most people say, just divorce. What the hell happened? But we want to kill them and their whole family. Don't they know who I am? Anyways, God, I release that person. God, I ask for that person all that I ask for myself and more. Joy, sobriety, health, happiness, and prosperity. May thy will be done. And there's a guarantee that comes with that. When you say that, you do not have to mean it. You can just say it. And within 2 weeks, you'll be on your knees saying your prayers and saying, what the hell am I praying for that idiot for? You know, you will have forgotten it. And that's in the big book. It's called Freedom of Bondage. If you're carrying around a resentment, I feel sorry for you. Because God is the only one that can take care of that resentment. You can't. If you could, you would have. But anyways, I find that that's works real well for me. But the fifth step, when I had to do the fifth step, I said, Oh, shit. I said to my sponsor, why the hell do I have to do this with you? And he says, Jack, he says, believe me, there's nothing that you're going to tell me that I haven't done myself. And he says, not to worry. He says, I am just a surrogate for mankind. That's all. He says, I'm not going to take notes, and I'll probably forget everything that's in your fist up by the time I leave. Okay. So I started in, and we went through the fifth step, and we really got some real good stuff out. And by the way, my sponsor was a guy that used to sell me drugs before he got sober and before I got sober. And I said to him, Bobby, I will cop to being an alcoholic, but I'm not a drug addict. And he said to me, Jack, he said, if you were sponsoring the guy, and he said he had a half a pound of grass in his closet, plus a plant growing under grow light, would you say that that might be just pushing it a little bit? Well, they were going to spray the fields down in Mexico. I mean, Jesus, I didn't want to put anything in my body that would hurt me. So I just had to take care of it. Anyways, what I came away with after that was that I had industrial strength denial. The thought never came to my mind that that wasn't right, that that would hurt me, hurt others. No, I believe it, I did not have a clue. And it's like when people say, why did you drink? I drank because I wanted to. Well, why did you want to? Because I wanted to. Period. That's what it was. And then finally I got to a point where I said, well, you know, when I used to drink, it's like taking a vacation. I could run away. But sometimes my head would hurt like a son of a gun the next day. And I didn't like to run away and feel like that the next day. But I did. And when I traveled, I hated it. I hated it, but I did it because I could make a lot of money doing that versus that if I just had a job and worked 40 hours a week someplace. So it came to pass that I had to admit that I was really screwed up by thinking. And with the loss of any boundaries was horrible. I didn't know what was right. I didn't know what was wrong. I thought this, I thought that, but my thinking capabilities had been shattered. So what the hell would I do? Now here's the horrible part about this whole story is the worse I got in my disease, the more money I made. My company grew and grew and grew. And today I get calls from all over the world to consult on different jobs. And I say, you know, why, God, what are you doing this to me for? About 6 months ago, I decided I was going to retire. And I was waiting for this one job to close. It closed last week, and I got three other jobs waiting right now to get going on another three. And, you know, I tell people I'm like a whore. You know, if they call, I go. You know. But I don't know how long I can do it, but I'm going to try and do it. And because every day I say, God, I'm willing to do your will, whatever it is. If it's for me to stop working totally, I'll do that. If it's for me to do different things, I'll do that. And you talk about physical problems. A year ago, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And part of that is that the cognitive thinking is off a little bit. I have trouble sometimes remembering, recalling things. And what I did, people ask me, what do you do? I said, do the same thing I did when I was drinking. I asked God for help, and he helped me. Why would I think that he wouldn't help me now? And he has been helping me. They put me on a new med, and I'm doing fairly well now. And, I don't know. But I do know that God will take care of you. That he loves all of us, each and every one of us. We're his children. And he does take good care of us. And when I look at the 11th step, or the 10th step, you know, when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. I'll give you an example there. I had a woman working for me one time. And a guy came out of the shop with a box. And it had to go out UPS that day. And he said, where do you want me to put this box? And she says, what are you talking about, my box? And the kid turned beet red. He was just a young kid. And she was just sticking it to him. And I looked at her. I said, Sandy, you bitch. Next morning, I was going out of town. I called her from LAX. And it was 7 o'clock in the morning. She came in early every day. And I apologized to her. Well, she went around and told everyone in the company that Jack apologized for calling me a bitch. She became my best bud. She watched out for me. Oh boy, did she take care of me. It was just that I treated her like I should treat people. And so these are the things that when I do those things like that, I can look back and it makes it easier to do it the next time and the next time and the next time. And then the 11th step, I try to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand him. How do you do that? You talk about him. You talk to him. You believe in him. And fourth and most important, you trust him. It's in the trust that really counts. You have to trust God. And I learned that, and my life got better. My life keeps getting better. My ex-wife, she calls me 2 or 3 times a week. She lives up in Reno. And I treat her just like I would anyone. More like a newcomer than anyone else. But no, I do treat her with respect. Like I try to treat everyone with respect. And it seems it's worked well for me. And then the 12th step, after having a spiritual let me say it right away. Having a spiritual awakening is a result of these steps. We try to carry the message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. That's what I just have been talking about. Practicing the principles that I learned in this program. And I learned it from people just like you. If someone has stood up here and he had a PhD and he's had a chalkboard here and started diagramming things out, forget it. But when I hear someone say, I was hurting so bad the other day because of da-da-da-da-da. And this is what I did. It does make a big difference. Now, there's one word in our book, especially in part of chapter 5 that we read, that's called absolute. Absolutely. We had to do these steps absolutely. No wiggle room. And the definition is completely, perfectly, absolutely essential, absolutely certain. Stand absolutely still. 2, without reservations or qualifications, positively, do absolutely nothing, get absolutely nowhere, absolutely refuse to answer. That sort of tells you what absolute is. There's no wiggle room. Either you're going to do it or you're not. And see, God hears so much from people praying out there. But when he hears someone say they're doing this absolutely, and they're asking for his help to do it absolutely, then he'll respond. At least he has to me. And for that, I'll be eternally grateful. Now, it's 9:15. Is this when I shut up? I can go more if you want, but it's good. Okay, because I could go a little longer. I could read you something and leave you with a laugh.
Go for it.
Okay. This is 20 questions. Do you lose time from work due to thinking? Is thinking making your home life unhappy? Do you think because you're shy with other people? Is thinking affecting your reputation? Have you ever had ever felt remorse after thinking? Have you gotten into financial difficulties as a result of thinking? Do you turn to lower companions and to inferior environments when thinking? Does your thinking make you careless with your family's welfare? Has your ambition decreased since thinking? Do you crave a think at a certain time daily? Do you want to think the next morning? Does drinking cause you to have difficulty in sleeping? Has your efficiency decreased since thinking? Is drinking jeopardizing your job or business? Do you think to escape from worries or troubles? Do you think alone? Have you ever had a complete loss of memory as a result of thinking? Has your physician ever treated you for thinking? Do you think to build up your self-confidence? Have you ever been hospitalized or institutionalized on account of thinking? Something to think about. Thanks for letting me share with you.